Thank you and welcome to Pull Up and Pour. So I'm here with Clinton Handy. I've known Clinton for some time. And we are here to talk about turning something that is tragic into purpose. So basically turning pain into purpose. So Clinton, I'm going to allow you to go ahead, introduce yourself to the audience and tell us a little bit about you, and then we'll jump right into it.
Hey, how you doing? Thank you for having me this evening. Name is Clinton Handy, father, grandfather, engaged, worked in telecommunications for over 35 years, Air Force veteran, and that's pretty much it. Hard worker, fun guy, here with you tonight. There we go.
Okay. All right. Good enough. Good enough. So you've lived a full life, you know. I mean, first, since you have, you know, served in desert, you know, Desert Storm, so really and truly, thank you for your service, you know, in doing that. And then telecom professional. So how do you think, how did your time in the military, like with Desert Storm, how did that influence your mindset when it comes to like resilience and discipline?
Well, you know, actually, it actually starts way before Desert Storm. Because I didn't make it all the way to the desert, but I played a key role in supporting military personnel who made it to the desert. But all the training that you do, from basic training up until the time that you're activated, those are the steps that kind of prepare you for if and when something like that takes place. So those are the things that prepare you for your resilience and everything that you train for. When the time calls, you're able to, you know, just go in and do what you have to do. You know, I mean, personally, I think everybody coming out of high school should have to do 2 years of military service, because it really lays a foundation in some things now. You know, some things I still use now from basic training to this day, because it really lays a foundation about teamwork, commitment, partnership, and you know, stuff that I continue to use this today. So,
okay. So what did success look like for you then before things changed for you? What did success, or how did you, what was that like for you then as opposed to now?
Are we talking about military or just my life in general?
Well, in terms of like your life, you know, what does success look like, you know, before, and then how does it look, what does it look like, you know, for you now?
Well, success before, it's always been, you know, I've always been a hard worker and a provider. So, you know, success always been able to just provide for my family and, you know, now my grandchildren and almost anything, you know, that I've decided to dive into. I've dived into a few business ventures, school, you know, almost everything. So success is just how well I do those things. And it's continuous. You know, I've had great success in school, great success in the military, great success in my job. So it's all about the preparation and the hard work. And so for me, the success really, it doesn't change. It's just the work and whatever the next level, you know, that I'm trying to achieve. And so, you know, reaching the next level, it's continuous. For me, it's continuous. So, you know, just accomplishing the things and then setting goals for the next thing and reaching that as well.
Okay. So we're just going to shift gears a little bit and we're going to kind of jump right in, you know, to while we're here. So if you're comfortable with sharing, can you tell us a little bit about your son, you know, and what he meant to you?
He's my youngest of four. So, and you know, he meant a lot to me, you know, especially leading up to his passing, because, you know, some of my other children, they moved a little further away. So, you know, he stayed here in Philly. So him and I, our relationship came closer because he would always swing by, you know, check up on me. So that relationship meant a lot. And, you know, he went through a rough patch. So helping him navigate that and seeing him, you know, come back from that, that continued to help, you know, build our relationship. So, you know, it got to the point where, like, he meant a lot. You know, it really meant a lot. Like I said, especially he and I being the only ones up here in Philly, and that connection, you know, that started to grow just from him and I reaching out, connecting with each other. It was very impactful.
Okay. Now, what was that, I would say, that moment like for you when things kind of shifted, like emotionally, like mentally, like when that shifted?
Well, you know, that day was a real funny eerie day. It was September 21st. I was working overtime and he had got himself into a little hiccup. So he was, you know, fighting some things in court. So that particular morning he called me and was like, you know, I got to go to court, you know, hope things work out. Because he had turned his life around. He was just trying to get past it. So September 21st, he called me and, you know, I told him, you know, we just, you know, hope for the best, pray for the best. Let me know. So that day went on. I was still at work. He called me, I want to say around 6:30, 7 o'clock that evening. And he was telling me how, you know, things worked out in his favor. So, and then of course, he, you know, he got around to asking me for some money. But, you know, if you ask my children, if you ask any of my kids, you ask for some money, it's going to come with a lecture. So, you know, so I was giving him a little bit of a lecture. And then, you know, but my son, he always has to explain himself. He always wants to give a reason and a rationale. But, you know, he started beating himself up about, you know, he's always catching a bad break. And I just was trying to, you know, refocus him. You know, he just had a good day, just got some good news. So, you know, I was just mentioning to him how, you know, life is happening to everybody. You know, it's always happening to everybody. It's just a matter of how you're going to respond to it. What are you going to do, you know, with the situations that you're confronted with? And it was just, I didn't know 2.5 hours later, I was going to have to eat those words that I just was sharing with him. And it was shortly after 9 o'clock, and I'm watching the Phillies make their run for the playoffs when I got the call. Gathered myself. By the time I got to the hospital, he was already gone. So, and that was on the 21st September. My birthday is the 22nd of September.
Oh, wow.
And his was the 24th of September.
Oh my God. Very close.
So it was just, you know, just playing that day back and that moment back and that time back. You know, like I said, you know, I had to get that bad news and then wake up and field a bunch of birthday wishes and be like, well, damn. And then 2 days later, you know, celebrate his birthday. So it was a lot. And, you know, if anybody who dealt with death, you got to go into preparation and you're trying to mourn, but it's business for everybody else. So that whole thing gets a little eerie.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I completely understand that. Yeah. So one of the things that you mentioned, which I have to say, I'm so proud of you and really commend you for, is that you talked about therapy. Okay. Mm-hmm. Because I know that grief can show up in many different forms. Okay. Not all the time is it shedding tears, it's frustration, you know, it's, you know, sadness, but more of a sometimes shut down, you know, it can show up in so many different ways. It can show up as, you know, lashing out at someone, you know. So I was very happy to hear when you mentioned about going for therapy. And I'll be honest, a lot of it is because, you know, while, you know, the blended Black community, we are seeking therapy more often now, okay, I don't think it's probably as much as our white counterparts, you know, and, you know, so that's something that I would, you know, love to see, you know, change, because to me, mental health is no different than if you have something wrong with your heart, you would go, you know, to go see a physician who was a heart, who was a cardiac specialist, okay, for your heart, okay. And when it comes to mental health, it's no different. You go see someone to be able to help you with that. But there also has always been, for whatever reason, you know, somewhat of a stigma. Now, thankfully, that's beginning to change, you know,
right.
And I feel that probably within maybe the last maybe 15 or 20 years or so, you hear more people of color, you know, not especially, I'll say, the Black community, you know, talking about it, speaking about it openly, you know, and not really, you know, having any shame. But there, in some behind closed doors, there's still that, you know, kind of, okay, you know, Uncle Joe, you know, he's not wrapped too tight. You know, it's Christmas time. We're going to put him up inside the attic. We're going to feed him. Uh-huh. And then we, you know, we could lock him. We're going to put him up there where he's comfortable. But he's not to come downstairs to be around everybody else. There's still a little bit of that shame and that stigma. So I was very glad to see that you took you were intentional about getting well and getting yourself help and recognizing that, okay, this is something that I actually am going to need some help with. And I can't just sweep this underneath the rug. You know, I have, you know, other, you know, children, other responsibilities. So I have to make the decision, you know, to be whole. Okay. To be whole. So what made you want to open up, you know, what was that like for you? What was your initial perception?
Well, I mean, this therapy, I've been going to therapy for a very long time. And everything that you mentioned, it has been a stigma, especially for African-Americans, even more so African-American male. But I've been in therapy for a very long time, and I've always spoke about it at work, at the barbershop. So so knowing, you know, once I, you know, suffered this loss, I knew when I got ready, it was going to be necessary because, you know, you go to therapy for different reasons. And this one, you know, even grief, you know, some people grieve, you know, breakup or divorce or something like that, or the loss of a parent. But this one is a little different when you lose a child, you know, when you lose a child because things are out of order. You know, you lose a loved one, you lose a spouse or a sibling, or they had some life.
Yeah.
You mourn them. You feel sorry for them. You lose your parents. It's the order of operation.
Yeah.
You know, but it doesn't mean you still mourn them.
Yeah.
But when you lose a child, it's not only that you're mourning, but something's just out of order. Like it wasn't supposed to be this way.
Yeah.
So that's a different, you know, it's just a different approach that, you know, I had to take for therapy. I knew it was going to be important. So, you know, just wanted to get through the business of, you know, making sure that he was laid properly. Took a little quiet time and then, you know, get to work. So, you know, so for me, this wasn't my first rodeo in therapy. Like I said, I've always been, for a very long time, I've been in therapy. And I try to, every chance I get, I try to encourage coworkers, people at the barbershop, you know, that it is needed. And then again, especially for African-American men, like they're like the last of the stronghold that really, you know, really fight against, at least in my experience, they're the last of the stronghold that still fights against therapy.
Mm-hmm.
But just like you mentioned, I have noticed it changing.
Mm-hmm.
It's just at a much slower pace. But I can say, at least in my circle,
mm-hmm.
I see more and more friends open up, you know, people open up to therapy. So I just knew it was needed. It's just the process was a little different because mm-hmm. I was mourning the loss of a child, which was out of order. It wasn't the natural order of things.
And that's so very true what you said, because I know in 2020, I lost my grandmother. I don't know if you knew. I think I was taking care of my mom, my grandmother, right? So in 2020, I lost my grandmom. But my grandmom was also 97. You know what I mean? So it was like as much as sad as I was to see her, you know, transition, you know, I had some time to be able to be with her. I took care of her in the latter parts of her life, you know, and on top of that, you know, my grandmother was kind of like the last one standing. She had outlived her mom, all her sisters, her brothers, even her favorite nephew and her favorite niece. And she was literally the last one. Okay. She's the eldest, you know, in our family. Now it's my mom, but she was the eldest in my family at 97. I mean, we're still talking smack too at 97. Just a feisty something. Just feisty. I don't even know. Well, I know where I can get it from then. I know where my dad
is.
Now I see where my.
It's an apple don't fall too far from the tree.
Let's see. I see where I've gotten some of my spice from, okay? But, you know, that's so true because, again, like I was saying, you know, it was time. You know what I mean? And as sad as it was, she had lived. But when you're talking about a child and you're the parent, you would think that, okay, chronologically, it would be you and not your son, you know? So one of the things that I liked and that, you know, you talked to me about before we got on here a couple days ago is how your therapist had you to turn things around, you know? So talk to me a little bit, if you don't mind sharing. I don't want to have you to
do anything. No, I don't mind. Yeah, I don't mind at all. I don't mind at all.
Okay, tell me what that session was like, you know, and what was said and what made you say, you know what? yeah, we're going to put, I'm going to put one foot in front of the other. And then a candle company, where did that come from? How did you think about that?
So my therapist, I had a very long relationship with my therapist. So, and like I said, we talked through various things. So when it came time to talk about grief, her approach was more so finding some things that's going to get me occupied, mm-hmm. Some things that, that's going to, sometimes take up some of that space in your head when it's mm-hmm. too quiet and you just mm-hmm. need something to do. And so surprisingly enough, candles, most people go to the store, they buy a candle, they light it and it is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
But, introducing me to candles and candle making, the process, the process that's required for the candle. And it's literally a science. It's a small size when you talk about the wick and the oil and the wax and the size mm-hmm. of the jar. All that stuff kind of has to work together to get a properly burnt candle. So, and just do that trial and error, just buying a starter kit and I think we fell off.
Uh-oh, I think we lost you.
Kick us out again.
Right up from where we left off. Sorry about that. Sorry about that out there.
Maybe you like it better on that side. You like
fortune, right? I don't know. Maybe that's it. Three times a charm. Let's hope we can get through this.
Okay.
I'm so sorry, but
that's all right.
But as you were saying, you had a long relationship with your therapist and
right. You
were talking about the process and the time that it may take with the wick and the jars and all of that.
So that really occupied the brain a little bit. And, it turned out to be fun. So, I started, it was leading up to Christmas. I think it was the holiday season 2022. And I was just making candles and, went to the holiday and was giving them out and people was liking them. And then, hey, how much are the candles? And I'm like, well, I'm not doing the business. This is just my therapy right now. So I continued to make some more, hand some more out. And then I think the year rolled over and people just started asking. So I thought maybe, give it a shot. So Pure 5 came from, my son had a clothing apparel company. Mm-hmm. So that was his saying. That was the name of his company. So I took the name of the company and added I made a purified candle company, played around with my family and my friends and some loved ones. The initial line was 5 candles that was his characteristics. So, you had charm and laughter and things like that. We came up with names and fragrances, and that was the first rollout. I had a collection of candles that include 5 characteristics of my son. And they were called the Remember Me collection, and it was well. So that's how we got here. So, it turned into a business. And so here we are.
That's amazing. That's amazing. So at the end of this, I would like to share kind of what that is. And I should have asked you before time, but what would be helpful is after this, give me your information, text it or email it to me, and then we'll get it out, you know, so
now, here's the thing going back to therapy, right?
So Okay.
Here's the thing going back to therapy. So, you know, sometimes you got to safeguard your own peace and your own happiness.
Okay.
And while I enjoyed doing candles initially, when you make it a business, sometimes the purpose you were making it for starts to become a challenge. And that's what I'm up against now. Not so much that I don't enjoy making candles. It's now it's for a different reason. And now everything that's going on in the economy, you know, trying to get what I need to continue the business and sell to the people that I want to sell to at a four, that's becoming challenging. So I am in a weird space where, you know, my therapy is now becoming a job.
I see.
And the business of it is got me in a weird spot, you know, because I still enjoy making the candles, but I don't, because I was sitting talking to myself the other day, and I don't know when I got back to the creative part, which is what provides the therapy. You know, like once I started rolling out my candles and I got my formulas right, I'm just pouring candles for the formula because people are asking for them, which I enjoy, which I like. Mm-hmm. But like I said, now I have new challenges, you know, challenges with the webpage and the website and then mass supply and the cost of supply. And I haven't created a new candle in a very long time, which was part of the therapy. So I'm trying not to let the business hijack the therapy. So it has me in a weird space right now. So I am going to take a moment.
I got to get
a new book. What I'm saying, when you started asking for the information, I had a problem with my last web designer. She hijacked my page. So it gets crazy. You know, I've learned some things. So, you know, again, it's trial and error, learning some things. So like you said, you take something that you have a passion for and you start a business. And then you got these other things that starts to really, for the candles, I'm taking a moment, you know, and I still pour them for the people that are close to me and that's been long-term clients. And so I still pour for those, but I'm regrouping before I get back out there because some things just went left and it's kind of playing with the therapy part of it. And I'm just trying to get regrounded in that because I don't want to take something that was fun and exciting and enjoyable. You make it a business and now it's something else. So I'm just trying to get my footing on that and kind of reclaim what the candles meant and what they supposed to be and what they supposed to do, what my intention, what they were supposed to provide. I'm trying to get regrounded in that. So when I get it up and running, we're going to revisit. We're going to have a relaunch once I get it all.
Listen, I wouldn't even mind doing it in like kind of like an in-person pull up and pour where, you know, come here and we can
pour some candles.
We actually demonstrate.
Pour some candles, absolutely.
Years. I think the last time I made them, I was literally maybe something like in the, I don't know, I may have been like in maybe something like sixth or seventh grade or fifth grade, something like that, you know.
Yeah.
I think it was probably something like fifth grade. It was like all about like colonial and, you know, how they, you know, we had to go to these different stations. And one of the stations was a candle making station, I remember. And I remember it took a while. It wasn't for the faint of heart. It took a minute, you know, if I remember correctly. You know,
right.
But yes, you know, we'll have to definitely do something like that, you know.
That would be exciting. I mean, because you pour the wax, you know, so, you know.
Exactly. So it falls right into it.
Right. Slides right in there.
We're just pouring wax.
Exactly.
Love that. Mm-hmm. So, okay. So we talked about that. When you're creating like that, what's going through your mind? You know, I mean, your hands are helping you process the grief, you know. What does that healing like look like for you today versus when you first started?
It quiets the noise. You know, it quiets the noise because there's some satisfaction to, you know, getting a new jar, finding out what wicks work in there, what wax, how much wax, how much percentage of oil you need to, the label, like what kind of label does it, you know, you want to put on it, what color, you know, all those things, it quiets the noise.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, you know, that's just what you need. You just need things, you know, quiet. You put your music on in the back and that's it. You just get a bunch of oils and you got your dipping sticks and you're smelling them. And you say, oh, that smells great. You know, you make a couple samples, let them cure up, burn them, see how they go. If you got to go back to the drawing board, that's what you do. So, but the process provides you just time to, you know, quiet the noise and focus on something else. It's a good distraction just to get you sometimes out of your head or get you refocused because you got to pay attention to it. You know, you're dealing with hot wax and, you know, it's expensive products with the oils and you don't want to, you know, so it requires some focus when you're doing that. And pretty much, like I said, it just quiets the noise and it gives you a goal. Each candle, you decide to go with a different vessel. That vessel requires a whole new set of math. And sometimes, you know, that's enough of a distraction to give you the focus on that. And then the satisfaction when you finally figure out that you got the right amount of wax and oil and fragrance oil, and then you burn it and you got a good candle, that it's a certain level of satisfaction that you just made another good product. So, you know, and that's what it does.
So your candles are then, you said, jars. So they're not the kind that are kind of like the long that ones.
No, these are coconut soy wax, right? Coconut soy wax. I got one burning back here. So this is like,
let me see. Oh, it, wow.
Well, you know, the light's a little distracted, but it's lit actually. But this is one of the jars, you know, and, but you know, I have several of them. You know, I'll send you some, Tisha. I have some vessels and stuff now that I'm about to just pour. It's a friend of mine's having a pop up coming up in the next month, I believe. So I have some vessels that I'm, you know, end of season. I'ma just, you know, fill those up, take them to the pop up, and then, you know, prepare myself to start new at the end of the summer, beginning of the fall. So I just want to get rid of the product that I have now. And then, so I'm going to pour those out, put those on discount, sell them at pop-ups. And then I'm looking to start new, you know, maybe some new vessels, some new jars, just set some new goals and, you know, come fall of this year.
Okay. Now I want to go back to something because we were talking about in terms of therapy and especially as it pertains to, you know, our community.
Mm-hmm.
And specifically in terms of Black men. So why do you think that you have so many Black men that struggle to express grief and to seek help?
Largely, the short answer is history. You know, the short answer is history. You got your family, African-American, who grew up in America struggling. You know how Blacks grew up in America struggling. And you have to be strong. You got to be strong. You know, you got to tuck stuff away. You got to deal with it. You got to be strong. And at that, you know, so throughout generations, mental health was, like we talked about, looked at as a weakness. You know, if you complained about it, cried about it, heard about it, hey, get over it. You know, get over it, tuck it away. You got to be strong. You a man. So it's all those stereotypes that society has put on us to just be strong.
Mm-hmm.
And anything short of that, you know, you're failing. So, and it takes, I mean, and that's kind of like where we are. Like I said, it's even when I decided to go to therapy, because like I said, I've been going a very long 20 plus years, I've been going to therapy. And I've always been open talking about it. And I stumbled into it. I stumbled into therapy on some BS, but it turned out to be one of the best things that ever happened to me. You know, at the time I was married, we were young. We were having, you know, some arguments, some disagreements. She got upset with me, called the cops, you know, go down the whole situation to make the shit go away. Anger management. Gotta go to anger management. Okay. I wanted to go away. I don't want no problem. I had to go to therapy, but it turned out to be one of the best things that ever happened to me, you know, and I continued to go to therapy for different reasons, for various reasons, whether it, you know, wasn't feeling the best about myself, trying to understand myself, grief through both parents, you know, just, you know, relationships. So I've always been in therapy And I tried to share that with people along the way. I got some pushback, but I'm very comfortable in who I am, you know, mm-hmm. and I started challenging people, you know, about, you know, you can say these things to me. You know, I'm trying to share with you what you might need to, oh, you know, just get over it. You're weak, you're this, that, and you up. And then I would just challenge them. You know, I would just challenge mm-hmm. them. Okay, so, you know, I'm weak because I can sit here and express myself to you. You're strong because you're going to sit there and hold all of it. That don't make no sense to me.
That makes no sense whatsoever.
But that's the uphill battle that African-American men. I can only speak for my friends who are predominantly male and what they share with me. I'm sure anybody who's have their own feelings about therapy. But in my circle, the men, it's just, if I go to therapy, if I admit that there's something wrong with me, then I'm supposed to be able to shoulder this. I'm supposed to be able to handle it, and everything else I just got to get over. And so I believe that's been the largest reason why there's been a lot of pushback from African-American men with therapy, because their whole lives they were told that they had to be strong and they should be able to handle this, and you should be able to push this down, and you should be able to keep it moving until, you know,
yeah.
You know, but like we mentioned briefly earlier, I am glad that even in my circle, I see more men going to therapy. Hell, my friend, 65 years old, he's going to sessions for the first time.
That's amazing.
So, you know, so I'm excited for him. You know, I had another good friend. Like I'm no therapist, but if I see something in you and I mention it to you, I had a friend that was denying that he was depressed. And so my approach was, look, I ain't saying you depressed. You just giving out all the signs. So you might want to go talk to somebody. So you might want to go talk to somebody. So, you know, I'm happy now that friend has gone and he's
That's
dealing
beautiful.
With some stuff. So it's been a really, I mean, if you ask me, it's been a really good year for me with my friends and therapy. So
that's good. Yeah. That's excellent.
Yeah, but I talk about it every chance I get. You know, I'll shout it to the rooftops. Like, you might want to get some help, you know? So yeah.
That's amazing, though. And I think just because I find that we have to start normalizing having that conversation and normalizing it within the community. I find that until that's done, we're going to continue to have that pushback. Oh, excuse me, that you were talking about, you know, but we do have to start, you know, kind of normalizing that.
And it has to be done together, too. It has to be, you know, the support of some of the women, too. I mean, because, you have some women in some relationships, you know, that they're saying the same thing that the man feels, like you're supposed to be strong. Oh, you don't need no therapy, this, that, and the other. So, you know, you need to support a people around you, especially those that claim to love you. You need that support as well. Hey, maybe we do need to go talk to somebody, or maybe you do need to go talk to somebody, and I'm here to support that. So, you know, it's not just an individual. It's a team effort, collective effort, you know, and between your family and your friends.
Yeah.
You know, that it might be something needed.
Yeah. And especially even too, you mentioned, you brought up a good point, you know, with women, especially women of color, and specifically, you know, as a Black woman, just feeling like many times, you know, a lot of us shoulder so much.
Mm-hmm.
We're expected to shoulder it, you know, and to kind of, you know, basically licking and keep on ticking and not really express it, because A, we are demonized if we express it. Now we're quote unquote angry, you know, Black women, okay, if we just express how we feel. But then when we hold it in, then we are, you know, harming ourselves, you know. Yeah. So it's that weird, you know, state, you know, of needing to share, but then when you do, you're condemned and looked at as being this angry person, okay.
Right.
You know, and then when you do, it's look like, okay, well, you should be able to handle that, or you're not strong enough, you know?
Right.
And again, you know, I'm glad that things are changing. Yeah. I would like to see things change more, and just being able to normalize those conversations will go a long way in being able to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, relationships is a whole nother topic and therapy by itself.
Wow.
you know, because you gotta look, right? Look, man, you got a whole lot of men demanding their emotional space in a relationship. But the moment they demand their emotional space, he's sassy. So it's a whole nother conversation.
It's a whole other topic. And many times when you have relationships, you know, I find that sometimes, you know, and I'm not saying women don't either, but I find that, you know, a lot of times when, you know, you're dealing with people who are unhealed, and women too. This is, you know, negating, you know, women, but, you know, many times they are looking for you to feel okay and be that therapist part for them, okay, and to be able to pour into them. But it's like, but yet they're unable to pour into you because they're not healed. So, you know, it becomes this conundrum of this kind of like, okay, well, I'm this one for you, but you're not for me. And then when you do feel better, then you go on and you move to someone else because now I remind you of where you were.
Right.
Where you are healed, you know.
Right.
So you do have to come back, and we have to, that'll be part two. We'll do a part two. And I know we can talk
we'll start some mess with that one.
Hey, that's what this is for. Pull up and pour. It's okay. No one said that these topics were going to be, you know, sunshine, roses for everyone, okay?
Right,
the whole
right.
point of this is for people to kind of, for you to come on, share how you feel, you know, get conversation started, you know? So things get a little bit hot under the collar and spicy. It's okay. I got a fan.
I was a firefighter in the Air Force. I can handle a little heat. I can handle a little bit of heat.
And you see me looking around here, you better be glad I don't have my fan. I would have pulled it out. That's my fan. I don't got my fan. I'm all right for a little hot.
Yeah. Okay.
But I find that is just a beautiful way of just honoring, you know, your son's legacy, you know, and also I can understand you protecting that, you know, and kind of like not letting it, being commercialized and going to the point where it overshadows the reason behind it, you know, and that's to honor, you know, his legacy, you know. If you could, you know, see your son now, what do you think he would say to you about what you've done in his honor?
I can see him now. They're pretty. What would he say? You know, it would probably be more the same. And that's, you know, so doing my therapy and reflecting on his life, our life, his loss. You know, people always say, you know, I have no regrets, this, that, and the other. And I won't say that I don't have no regrets, but I really can't think of anything, because what it is I tried to take every opportunity that I could to talk to my son. Like, we would have conversations. I pulled no punches. I told him when he was effing up. I told him when he was doing well. And I think what he would say to me now, it would be pretty much consistent of who I am. You know, I've always been a provider, supportive. So I would more like to just have conversations and wonder, like, where would he have been, you know? Because, like I said, he'd been through a rough patch, and he'd done the work to turn his life around. He started a apparel business, and one of the difficult things that I had to deal with, because he used my address as a business address, so one of the things that I had to deal with was that his business funding started coming through. So, you know, I had to dissolve his company, call those companies and let them know. But it felt good. It felt good to know that he turned his life around and he started to do something that was meaningful.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, to lose him and then come December and January and, you know, things that he had applied for started coming through. It just made me think and wonder, you know, in that time, 2022 to now, like, where would he have been? What would he have accomplished? You know, what would he have done? What he would say to me is like what he always say, Dad, I got you. You know, that was, Dad, I got you. You know, hey, can you do this? Can you do that? Dad, I got you. Dad, I got you. And, you know, same thing when he turns his life around and he make it big. Dad, I got you. So that's the only thing that comes to mind is probably just another dad. Hell, I would really love if it was like, dad, go ahead and retire because I got you. That would be what I hope he would be saying to me. You know, go ahead and retire because I got you. But I think for the most part, you know, I've been pretty consistent with my children. And, you know, some people, you know, they hate, oh, you shouldn't tell them I told you so's. But I was a good person that a well-placed I told you so and the right time really, really shaped some things out. So, you know, if it's something that I asked you not to do or tell you that you shouldn't be doing, if it, when it came around and bit you in the ass, you were going to get I told you so. Mm-hmm. And I took advantage of every opportunity, whether, you know, if it was good, I would congratulate him. If it was bad, now I'd let him have it. Mm-hmm. So I feel good in that aspect that I don't think I missed a mark. You know, now, okay. Of course, when they're going through some changes, as a parent, you're going to wonder, well, did I miss something? Did I make a turn? Did I miss a turn? Because that's what parents do. You think you're going to get everything right. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you forget when they get older and they start making their own decisions, you have no control over that. The only thing that's left is the foundation that you would hope that you provided for them. And even with that, I have to admit, even with that, sometimes that requires you to work through that with therapy. Like, did I miss a mark? Did I miss something?
Mm-hmm.
Because why would they do this or why would they do that?
Mm.
Was it my parenting? And sometimes you got to work through that to reassure yourself that, you know, and I mean, that's if you provided them with a good foundation, you still got to work through that and say, you know what? Yeah, I did. You know, I feel good at the life that I tried to provide for them, you know, because you ask kids, you're not doing enough. It takes them to be well into adulthood, maybe even have their own kids before they say, all right, they did enough. They did all right, you know, they did all right. But up until then, up until that moment when the light bulb comes on to your children that this is what my parents was talking about, you know, a parent might question, you know, did I do enough? And I think that just comes with parenting. But having worked through therapy, still suffer his loss because I don't, you know, I carry it. I don't sit it on the side. I don't put it on the shelf. If I'm having a day and something of my son rolls in, I take a moment and I deal with it. I'm not tucking nothing away.
Yeah.
I have my moment and then I keep on going about my day, you know, and it could be sights and sounds and smells and, you know, it is what it is. But that's another thing when you go to therapy that you can identify what that is. You're not always wondering or guessing, what is this? If you go to therapy and you get some understanding of yourself, some understanding of the situation, so that when it happens, you can identify that's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, if a memory of them rolls in and I become overwhelmed, I can identify that's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I allow myself to have that moment.
To have that moment, exactly.
If it's at work, guess what? You got to wait.
Mm-hmm.
If it's with family and friends, it has to wait. Mm-hmm. I don't tuck it away. I don't sit it on a shelf. If I have to, and it's too much or it's too strong, I need to find me a nice little spot to let this pass. But right. That's only if you can identify what's happening. And for me, right. I can identify. I could tell where it's coming from and what it's rolling in. And people who don't deal with it, they're always trying to figure out, you know, what is this? You know, when is it going to go away? You like, if you ask me, it's never going to go away.
No, that's one of the things I've found out.
Right. It just changes.
But it doesn't go away.
It doesn't go away. What you need to learn is how are you going to manage it?
Exactly.
Because it's not going to go away. And if you keep saying, and the biggest mistake anyone can say, whether it's their child or any grieving process, is I should be over this by now. That's the biggest mistake anybody can make.
It's such a myth because there is no timeline.
There is not.
Grief. There's no timeline.
There's not.
In fact, when you're talking about the stages of grief, sometimes people are able to work through it and sometimes you get stuck and you go back and you have to continue to move forward, you know, but there's no timeline when it comes to grief, you know, and I find that in certain situations, depending upon what it is, some of it comes to unforgiveness of themselves, okay, holding on to things, okay? And sitting in a fence, okay? But sitting in a fence many times with themselves, okay, of holding on, of I should have done this, or have I done this or done that, you know, or worse, blaming, you know, the person who has passed on, you know, even worse, you know?
Right.
But yeah, you know, it's being able to kind of also truly let things go. I mean, we've all heard that saying, okay, or I guess a lot of us let go and let God, but truly let go and let God, you know, give it to him, you know, and don't sit in that resentment, because that resentment then builds, you know, that sitting in a fence then paves the way for resentment to kind of come in and be angry at yourself, you know, and then that comes out.
But even that letting go and let God to some people, it's to some extremes. And, you know, like I said, I'm not a therapist and I can't speak for everybody, but I can only speak for situations that I've encountered. And sometimes that letting go and let God, that's just enough for somebody not to deal with what's going on, you know, because if they feel that.
Just, you know, let it there. Okay. Then
Sometimes healing requires people to deal with this stuff right in its face. And if you letting go and letting God, then, you know, if you're going to say at some point, you know, God is going to take this off me, it don't work that way. You know, it don't work because, you know, faith without works is dead. So it don't work that way. Sometimes even if you letting go and let God, that's only after you put in the work.
Right. You still have to do your part. And grieve and be okay with grieving. And like you were saying, don't feel the need to shy away. Okay.
Right.
You know, feel that. And I find that a lot of times people don't want to feel. They are terrified of vulnerability. They are terrified of actually feeling. And when you're dealing with grief, in my experience, the only way out is through. You don't really get out, but the only way is
you gotta go through.
It's going through it and putting one foot in front of the other day by day. I remember, you know, when my grandmother first passed away, I have these mixed tiles that I would, you know, kind of have a different, you know, things in my home. And I have one with like my mom and my grandmother, and then a cousin of mine who came to visit us years ago. And I remember when she, you know, first passed away, I could not look at it. You know, it was very, very hard for me. And there was a video, you know, that I had kind of strung together, or someone made me, one of the two. And it had like just, you know, just a somber song. And it had like all those different like moments, you know. And I remember just, you know, it was very upsetting to me. But then over time, I began to realize, and you know, I don't want to turn this into a theology session, but I know for me personally, I had a goodbye dream. I did. Right. I had a goodbye dream, you know, and, you know, in my dream, I saw my grandmother, you know, and I remember when I saw her, she was kind of standing up on a step, and I said, Nanny, I used to call her Nanny. I said, Nanny, is that you? She said, And I remember asking her if I could hug her, you know. And when I hugged her, it was the most beautiful and strangest feeling that I ever felt. Like, I hugged her in the dream. And when I hugged her, every essence of who she was, that's what I felt. You know, it was, I couldn't actually feel her body, okay? But I believe I felt her soul, her spirit, okay, everything. And it was like when I hugged her, everything of who she was from the time that I was, you know, a kid, you know, up to an adult, and, you know, and everything in between, it just went through me, you know. And it was so comforting, you know, to me, you know, at that time. And, you know, the dream eventually ended, but, you know, it was at that moment, I think, for me, when I was like, it's also too, when I asked her, how are you doing? And she was like, I'm doing better than you. I was like, you still snarky.
She good now. Right.
Like, real snarky in the dream. In the dream, you still snarky. But, you know, but again, at that moment, I was like, okay, Nanny's good, you know, Nanny's right. good, you know, and now, you know, I still think about her, but I'm able to now look at things and smile and laugh about different things. You know, they don't make me as sad as what right. they used to, you know, but again, uh-huh. that is, you know, it's been a few years, you know, and, you know, it is one after the other. And it also is quite different than laying your child to rest. Right. You know, it is quite different, you know. But I, you know, I just would encourage everyone, if you're dealing with grief, you know, don't just keep it inside. Go seek help, you know, in however right. way you seek help. If it's going to go see your getting into a faith-based, you know, ministry, a counseling session that specializes in grief, or going to see a traditional, you know, licensed therapist. But go get help. Don't just try to manage it by yourself. Because one thing I think that I learned is that you can have friends, but it's also to a certain extent that it can be isolating, especially right. if they've never gone through that. They've never right. gone through death. They don't have anything to compare it to, you know, and while they want to be supportive, okay, they can't really, you know what I'm saying? They don't quite right. understand. And many people, friends or not, they don't know right. what to say to someone who has lost somebody. Right. They're just yeah. not, you know, they're not, you know, they're not able to do, they can barely process anything like that for themselves, let alone for someone else. So I find that, you know, even, you know, kind of turning to friends and loved ones can kind of be, you know, a trap door to a certain extent. It's like, it feels like, that, you know, but I don't know, you know. So however, you know, you see that you're able to get help, I just want, you know, everybody listening out there to do so, you know, to
right.
do that and to a great, you know, being vulnerable and talking. You know, I know that we have sometimes a lot of, you know, in terms of just, you know, finding therapy and having things that are affordable. And, you know, I know that that also can play, you know, a big part of it, you know, right. there are resources, you know, and what I'll do is I will, you know, kind of grab, you know, put together some resources to kind of put them out there, you know, so that if anything happened, people have those resources in which to go to, you know, but I want to thank you, you know, so much, you know, for being here, Clinton. It has been.
Thank you for the invite. And thank you for the invite. Yeah,
absolutely. It's been great to see you. It's been a long time.
It has.
You know, we definitely have to do the whole candle session. Like, I'm excited about that.
I can make that happen.
I'm so excited about that. And, you know, and Leah, I would love you to come back and, you know, we do a part two and we talk about, you know, therapy when it comes to relationships, you know.
Yeah.
Does it work or does it not, you know, in your opinion, you know? And
I mean, that'd be great. I love that.
Good one. Yeah. By that time, my other co-host, Eddie Theokis, or Edward Theokis, who is a licensed clinical therapist and focuses on trauma, will then be back with me. We can really kind of get into it. I know this is being, you know, I have a big passion, big heart when it comes to therapy. I mean, certified life and relationship coach, and she is a licensed clinical therapist. So the two of us together will love to be able to kind of get into this, you know, and you are definitely welcome back.
Yeah, because I enjoy the topic. Like I said, I ain't no therapist, but I got plenty hours under my belt.
Cheers. Thank you for pulling up and pouring. I want to say goodbye, but not complete. Good night, but not goodbye. We will be back next Monday at 6 o'clock. Next Monday, we're going to get into career development, talk about human resources. I have a sister who's coming here from the Washington, D.C. area. I know her for many years. This is Tiffany Walker. She has been in human resources for a long time. She's worked in private sector and also, you know, kind of right around the public sector too. So we're going to talk to her in terms of how things have changed from there to now, and especially as we start to get in AI, and what does that look like for the interviewing process, and giving some tips on how you should perhaps line things up with your resume so that the AI, when they kind of go through that, okay, they pick up certain words and how you'll be able to fit and kind of move through the recruitment process. I myself am a long-term recruiter with about 25 years of experience with recruitment. So this would be really good, you know, to kind of get Tiffany here and, you know, kind of hear what she's talking about and how this will be able to kind of help people today who are in the workforce, you know. And perhaps, you know, maybe going right back to the workforce, maybe you may find other things that bring you joy. Until next time, pull up and pour. Come with your favorite beverage, your glass, your heart, but listen with your soul. And we'll see you next week. Bye-bye, all.